Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Reed, and this is the Midland Reporter Telegram Weekend Edition for Saturday, July 29th, 2023. Bond Committee Presentation, Things to Know, Portables. Reducing the number of portable classrooms is at the heart of the $1.6 billion plan offered this week by the Midland Bond Planning Committee. According to the district, there are currently 115 portable classrooms on district campuses. That number will explode in the next 10 years to 245 if nothing is done. The district expects enrollment to grow at an annual growth rate of 1.6% a year, or jump from 27,821 students in 2023 to 32,146 in 2033. A decision to build two new 4,200-seat high schools will reduce the number of portable classrooms needed to 38, according to the district and bond planning committee members who presented its findings to the MISD school board on Tuesday. Quote, the wave is coming, end quote, a presenter said. Quote, we need to plan now, end quote. While the impact of growth on MISD campuses is likely to be a hot topic during a campaign, portable classrooms have become a poster child for packed schools and the need for facility expansion. The district reported that an addition of 130 portables in 10 years would have a $19.5 million impact on Midland ISD's maintenance and operations budget. Proponents of the Bond Planning Committee's plan also will state that portable classrooms make students less safe and aren't conducive to better student outcomes. Quote, without proper facilities, the community will be impacted, end quote, said Robert Marquez, the representative of District 2. Quote, without making the investment, Midland cannot move forward, end quote. Midland ISD board members will make the determination in August on how much of the $1.68 billion bond to put on a November 7th ballot. The district previously reported that interest could increase the total bond debt, principal and interest, to $3.47 billion should voters approve both propositions. On Tuesday, the district reported that the total cost impact of the tax bill on the average homeowner in Midland would be $444 a year, which is down from $571.08. Midland ISD reported the number has been adjusted for compression. MOTRAN celebrates extra state funding for roads. The Midland-Odessa Transportation Alliance, MOTRAN, provided more detail on the proposed 2024 Unified Transportation Plan, UTP, released in July, and its impact on roads in the Texas Department of Transportation's Odessa District. MOTRAN President James Beauchamp reported that the state will provide an additional $1.06 billion in funding for the TxDOT Odessa District over the next 10 years. That includes $244.7 million for eight projects inside Midland County and $480.7 million for five in Ector County. The proposed UTP would provide an additional $579 million alone in commission strategic funding for completion of the expansion and improvements of Interstate 20 in Midland and Odessa, MOTRAN reported. The UTP also shows additional regional connectivity funding for expansion of U.S. 285 from the city of Pecos to State Highway 302, as well as passing lanes on another portion of U.S. 285 between Farm to Market Road 1776 and I-10 in Pecos County and a portion of U.S. 67 in Upton County. Under the new UTP, the Odessa District would also see nearly $1.2 billion in discretionary funds tied back to energy sector funding for use across the district, MOTRAN reported. Quote, we appreciate Governor Abbott, Chairman J. Bruce Bugg, and the entire Transportation Commission's continuing commitment to the Permian Basin, end quote, Beauchamp said. Quote, the additional discretionary funding will help expedite Interstate 20 expansion and improvements. Given the delays and difficulties we have seen involved with the project so far, we need to do everything possible to speed this project along. Those delays cost businesses and create other safety concerns for the traveling public. Beauchamp noted that nearly 70% of severance taxes generated in the state come from the Permian Basin. quote, the majority of the over $1 billion in district discretionary funds is tied back to severance taxes generated in oil and gas producing areas, end quote, Beauchamp said. Quote, the severance windfall that comes from the Permian Basin has helped make this possible, and it is paying dividends, end quote. Public comments can be made online through August 7th regarding the 2024 proposed UTP at the following link, https://www.surveymonkey.com/r/2024-UTP-online-comment-form. Midland and Ector County projects in the proposed 2024 Unified Transportation Plan, UTP, released in July. Midland County. I-20, Ector County Line to County Road 1300, $14 million. I-20, County Road 1250 to SH-349, $185 million. I-20, County Road 1300 to County Road 1250, $18 million. I-20, State Highway 349 to FM-1208, $13 million. State Highway 158, expansion from Wadley to Sinclair, $5 million. State Highway 349, intersection at FM 1788, $5 million. Business 20 at Faudry, $1.3 million. Business 20 at Avalon, $1.4 million. Business 158 at Midland Drive, $2 million. Ector, I-20, JBS to Midland County Line, $69 million. I-20, FM 1936 to Monahan's Draw, $214 million. I-20, Monahan's Draw to JBS, $173 million. State Highway 302, interchange at 8th Street, $6.2 million. Loop 338, upgrade to freeway from Yukon to 385, $18.5 million. Bond Committee presentation, things to know. Middle schools. Should voters pass Proposition A, that would mean Midland ISD would move to a middle school system with students in 6th through 8th grades on 6 different campuses across Midland. Those campuses would include current junior highs, Avail, Alamo, Goddard, and San Jacinto. Midland Freshman High School, a 9th grade campus currently, would become a middle school, as would the current Legacy High School campus on Neely Avenue. The current Midland Freshman High School would become a 1,200 student campus. Improvements include an expanded kitchen and new parking lots with lights. Midland ISD reported the following improvements to accomplish, quote, complete middle school expectations, end quote. Construction of 3 tennis courts, addition of a 4-lane track, and lights at the turf field. Aesthetic improvements to existing building interior and exterior. New furniture and added technology equipment throughout building. Addition of a building-wide fire sprinkler system and improvements to aging facility systems. Handicap accessibility and building code improvements, safety and security improvements, construction of new offices at main entrance with secured entry vestibules, updated cameras, intrusion alarm, access control, intercom and radio communication systems. Avail's transformation to a 1,200 student capacity would include 20 additional classrooms. Other improvements include upgraded technology equipment and classroom addition, addition of a building-wide fire sprinkler system, improvements to aging facility systems, handicap accessibility and building code improvements, safety and security improvements, updated cameras, intrusion alarm, access control, intercom and radio communication systems. Alamo's transition to a 1,200 student middle school campus would require an additional 19 classrooms and support spaces, expanded kitchen and library spaces, new library, new parking lot with lights. Other improvements at Alamo include new furniture at classroom and library additions and dining area, upgraded technology equipment at classrooms and administrative office areas, addition of a building-wide fire sprinkler system, improvements to aging facility systems, handicap accessibility and building code improvements, safety and security improvements, updated cameras, intrusion alarm, access control, intercom and radio communication systems. Goddard's transition to a 1,200 student middle school campus would require an additional 14 classrooms and support spaces, expanded kitchen and dining, a new parking lot with lights, and new parking lot with lights. Other improvements at Goddard include new furniture at classroom and administrative office additions and at the dining area, upgraded technology equipment at classroom and administrative office additions, addition of a building-wide fire sprinkler system, improvements to aging facility systems, handicap accessibility and building code improvements, safety and security improvements, construction of new offices at main entrance with secured entry vestibules, updated cameras, intrusion alarm, access control, intercom and radio communication systems. Sandra Sinnoh's transition to a 1,200-student middle school campus would require an additional 18 classrooms and support spaces, expanded kitchen, and a new library. Other improvements at Sandra Sinnoh include new furniture at classroom and library additions and dining area, upgraded technology, equipment at classroom and library additions, addition of a building-wide fire sprinkler system, improvements to aging facility systems, handicap accessibility and building code improvements, safety and security improvements, secured entry vestibules, updated cameras, intrusion alarm, access control, intercom and radio communication systems. Changes to the Legacy High School campus would include reconstruction of 3 tennis courts to accomplish complete middle school expectations, aesthetic improvements to existing building interior and exterior, new furniture and added technology equipment at all middle school program spaces, conversion of space is required to satisfy middle school programs and support spaces, addition of a building-wide fire sprinkler system, improvements to aging facility systems, handicap accessibility and building code improvements, safety and security improvements, reconstruction of administration office to main entrance with secured entry vestibules, updated cameras, intrusion alarm, access control, and intercom and radio communication systems. Opinion. Call me when the Midland ISD bond election is over. On Wednesday, the Reporter-Telegram published a story having to do with bond election, and well, some people were not happy. Even some friends have communicated, expressing their disappointment. The purpose of today's opus isn't to get into a debate about that story. It is to remind a community to pace yourself. There are still more than 100 days between the day this column is published and Election Day, November 7th. And if you don't think I am counting, you are crazy. Every time someone asks what's your favorite thing about a particular election, I usually think to myself, quote, the day after, end quote. Because it is true. Elections are a pain in the butt and stress inducer like no other, and I have the literal battle scars to prove it. No matter what we write, what type of opinion articles we ask for, or how well our forum goes off, no one is going to be happy. This bond will be no different. I will be accused of being pro-bond, anti-bond, and everything in between. I will have people speculating about where my kids go to school, about the fact that my parents are Midland High graduates, and about who I sit next to at a school board meeting. Someone might even dig up that my grandparents were both Midland ISD employees decades ago, because that makes me a legacy. It is the nature of the beast. It comes with the territory that is life. I will remind myself that the first publisher of the Midland Reporter-Telegram, T. Paul Barron, stated this newspaper will strive for progress. I believe 100% in those words. Fortunately for Mr. Barron, progress in the 1930s wasn't determined with a clever tweet or social media message. Times were simpler in those days. I refuse to define progress as it is related to this bond election. The MISD school board will determine what the eventual ask looks like. We will report that ask, good and not as good, depending on your point of view. And Midlanders, not this newspaper, will be the jury. As I have written previously, my top concerns for the district are student outcomes and discipline. Again, I ask for people on both sides to pace yourself because elections aren't won in July. They aren't decided 100 days out. And like a friend once told me, if the project is a good one and people have trust in the elected officials and executive leadership that will execute the plan, Midland voters will generally vote for ballot initiatives that come their way. I caution Midlanders who want to blame past election losses on some anti-public education sentiment in Midland, because that's not the truth. Midland ISD has been victorious in 3 of its last 4 bond elections since 2003, and the election in 2019 was destined for victory, if not for a series of campaign-related errors. That bond plan presented to the community was good enough in 2019. The execution of the campaign, particularly by Midland ISD executive leadership, cost this community a needed win. Any election loss since 2001, and I believe there have been 4 failed tax elections, happened because the plan wasn't good enough and or voters didn't have confidence in leadership. There are just too many examples in the last 2 decades of the electorate being swayed to vote in the affirmative. Midland ISD, three bond election wins totaling more than $250 million. The City of Midland, the $100 million road bond and the economic development sales tax election. The Hospital District, a bond victory of $115 million and a sales tax election. The County, 1-for-1 in bond elections. Midland College, also 1-for-1 in bond elections. That sounds like a $500 million in voter-approved election victories, not including the tens of millions of dollars in sales tax collected. Getting back to the weeks before the campaign, again, it is political lifetime. There will be plenty of ups and downs. Pace yourself. As for me, I'm looking for a rock to climb under, somewhere where I can avoid social media and keep the lowest profiles. Hopefully, I will be busy enough printing your letters, running bond participants' opinion articles to give you more information and offering the occasional story. Call me if you want, 432-352-0605, but I am telling you I am Switzerland when it comes to this election. My sanity and health will thank me for it. Yes, 102 days and counting. Bond Committee Presentation Things to Know. Facts and Figures. The Recommendation. A. Two new high schools, $1.077 billion. Middle school additions and renovations, $225.3 million. In safety, security, and accessibility, $58.7 million. Proposition A, total $1.361 billion. B. Deferred maintenance, $260.2 million. New elementary, $57 million. Proposition B, total $317.2 million. I and S tax rates, currently 7 cents per $100 valuation. If bond passes, 28.46 cents per $100 valuation. Total cost impact, an average home value of $341,000. $444 a year. Project timeline. Planning and design of new high schools. Start January 2024. Complete spring 2025. District-wide improvements, maintenance and renovations to aging facilities, safety, security, and accessibility. Start January 2024. Complete December 2028. Construction of new elementary school in Northeast Midland, Lone Star Trails. Start spring 2024. Complete summer 2025. Construction of new Legacy and Midland High Schools. Start summer 2025. Complete summer 2028. Reuse freshman and or senior high school campuses for middle schools. Start spring 2028. Complete summer 2029. Bond calendar. August 21st, last day to call a bond election. October 8th, first day to publish notice of an election. October 10th, voter registration. October 17th, last day to post notice of an election. October 23rd, first day of early voting. October 24th, last day to publish notice of an election. November 3rd, last day of early voting. November 7th, election day. NWS, triple digits return to Midland forecast. Triple digits are coming back. The National Weather Service reported Friday that high temperatures of 100 or hotter are expected from Monday through at least Friday of next week. The warmer weather will help close out one of the warmest months on record in Midland's history and start August off on a hotter note. Before the 100-degree streak, the NWS expected 98 degrees to hang around for another 2 days. Should that be the high temperature on Saturday and Sunday, 98 degrees will be the high for 5 straight days. There is no rain in the 7-day forecast. Weather report. Friday's high, 98 degrees. Typical high for July 28th, 96 degrees. Friday's low, 72 degrees. Typical low for July 28th, 73 degrees. Record high for July 28th, 106 in 1944. Last 3 days. Wednesday, 98 degrees. Thursday, 98 degrees. Friday, 98 degrees. Next 3 days. Saturday, 98 degrees. Sunday, 98 degrees. Monday, 100 degrees. 4 earthquakes recorded near Midland this week. The U.S. Geological Survey reported 4 earthquakes near Midland in the past 5 days. The USGS recorded a 1.9 magnitude earthquake at about 1:31 a.m. Friday, around 27 miles east of Forsan. The quake took place at the depth of 8 miles. On Thursday, a 1.8 magnitude earthquake was recorded northwest of Stanton. The earthquake took place 11.8 miles northwest of Stanton at 6:56 p.m. at a depth of 4.3 miles, according to the USGS. A 2.0 magnitude quake was recorded Wednesday, 17 miles south of Westbrook, southeast of Big Spring. The quake happened at around 8:02 p.m. at a depth of 4.23 miles. The USGS also recorded a 2.0 magnitude earthquake on Tuesday, 19 miles south-southeast of Midland. The quake happened at 1:33 a.m. at a depth of 5 miles. What's up with Midland? Centennial Park. Movies in the Park, Hotel Transylvania 4, August 11th. City Nights, Barbecue Cook-Off, Saturday. Hunks the Show, August 1st. The Cookie Encounter, Beginner Cookie Decorating Class, August 17th. The Destination, Jake Bush, Saturday. Tejano Thirsty, Thursday, August 3rd. Friday Night Live, The Day Trips, August 4th. Bailey Ray / Alora Leonard, August 5th. Karaoke Night, August 10th. Friday Night Live, Jerry Hart and Flatland, August 11th. La Dez, August 12th. Open Mic Night, August 17th. Earth, Body, and Soul. Walk-in Tara Reading, every Tuesday. Walk-in Reiki Energy Clearing, and every Wednesday. T and Tara, August 4th. Aura Photography, August 5th. Chakra Balancing, August 18th. Vendor, Saturday, August 19th. Automatic Writing with Your Guides, August 24th. Horseshoe, Midland County Fair, August 24th through 27th. Museum of the Southwest, Downtown Midland Farmers Market, every Saturday. Summer Sunday Lawn Concert Series, Sunday. Sci-Fi MST3K, The Movie, August 25th. Ranchland Hills, Hope in One Golf Tournament, August 8th. The Tailgate, Pat Green, August 18th. Tall City Brewing Company, Geeks Who Drink Trivia, every Tuesday. Tall City Beer Run, every Thursday. Tall City Brewing Company Invitational, August 12th. The Venue at Live Oak, Drew Fish Band, August 3rd. Tejas Brothers, August 24th. The State Line Band / Chris DeAnda, August 31st. Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center, Cinema Under the Stars, Munster University, August 6th. Alice Cooper, August 19th. John Waite with John Ford Coley, August 24th. Kat Timpf, August 26th. Obituaries. Anne Frances Carter. Anne Frances Carter of Midland, Texas, slept into the eternal embrace of the infinite on July 13, 2023. Born Anne Frances Kyriazis, she was later given the surname of her stepfather, William Gordon. Anne was born in Lynn, Massachusetts on November 27, 1947. Anne is preceded in death by her grandson, Bryce, and is survived by her other grandchildren, Electa, Blake, Renee, and Lynn, her great-grandchildren, Marie, Miles, and Josie, her daughter, Brandy, her son-in-law, Jeremy, and her son, Jason. May she rest in peace. Arrangements are under the direction of Maui Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory in Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Lucille Earl McHarg Graham. Lucille Earl McHarg Graham passed away Wednesday, July 5th, 2023, at 100 years old in Midland, Texas, in her home. She was born on November 15, 1922, in Tyrone, Oklahoma, to Eva Margaret Wiggins McHarg and James Paul McHarg. Both have preceded her in death. She is survived by her daughter, Gloria Ann Graham, granddaughter, Anita Marie Moore, great-granddaughter Arabella Ray Moore, and son-in-law Bryn Keith Moore, Jr. She is also survived by her brothers Jim McHarg, Richard McHarg, sister-in-law Dolores McHarg, and sister Muriel Midge McHarg Evans, along with several loving nieces and nephews. She was preceded in death by son Jerry Paul Graham, mother-in-law Anne Irene Braswell Graham, and Ray Graham. A memorial service will be held at Rest Haven Memorial Park on August 7, 2023, at 11 o'clock a.m. in Midland, Texas. Arrangements are under the direction of Maui Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Reese Edwin Ritz. Reese Edwin Ritz, 69, of Midland, passed away on Sunday, July 23, 2023, surrounded by his family. Reese was born July 14, 1954, in Odessa, Texas, to Nancy and Dick Ritz. He is preceded in death by both parents and his sister. Reese is survived by his wife, Paula, son, Brandon, and his wife, Emily, of Georgetown, Texas. Stepson, Chas Gauthier, and his wife, Stephanie, of Midland, Texas. Stepdaughter, Lacey Connolly, and her husband, Justin, of New Braunfels, Texas. Granddaughters, Isabella Ritz and Campbell Connolly. and grandsons Holt Connolly and Jagger and Ford Gauthier. A celebration of Reese's life will be held Friday, August 4th at 1 o'clock p.m. at the Branch, Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home, 3800 North Big Spring Street in Midland. Memorial donations can be made in Reese's name to the Aphasia Center of West Texas, 5214 Thompson Drive, Midland, Texas, 79703. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Bond Committee Presentation, Things to Know. Middle Schools. Should voters pass Proposition A, that would mean Midland ISD would move to a middle school system with students in 6th through 8th grades on 6 different campuses across Midland. Those campuses would include current junior highs, Abel, Alamo, Goddard, and San Jacinto. Midland Freshman High School, a 9th grade campus currently, would become a middle school, as would the current Legacy High School campus on Neely Avenue. The current Midland Freshman High School would become a 1,200 student campus. Improvements include an expanded kitchen and new parking lots with lights. Midland ISD reported the following improvements to accomplish, quote, complete middle school expectations, end quote. Construction of 3 tennis courts, addition of a 4-lane track, and lights at the turf field. Aesthetic improvements to existing building interior and exterior. New furniture and added technology equipment throughout building. Addition of a building-wide fire sprinkler system and improvements to aging facility systems. Handicap accessibility and building code improvements. Safety and security improvements. Construction of new offices at main entrance with secured entry vestibules. Updated cameras, intrusion alarm, access control, intercom and radio communication systems. Abel's transformation to a 1,200 student capacity would include 20 additional classrooms. Other improvements include upgraded technology equipment and classroom addition, addition of a building-wide fire sprinkler system, improvements to aging facility systems, handicap accessibility and building code improvements, safety and security improvements, updated cameras, intrusion alarm, access control, intercom and radio communication systems. Alamo's transition to a 1,200 student middle school campus would require an additional 19 classrooms and support spaces, expanded kitchen and library spaces, new library, new parking lot with lights. Other improvements at Alamo include new furniture at classroom and library additions and dining area, upgraded technology equipment at classrooms and administrative office areas, addition of a building-wide fire sprinkler system, improvements to aging facility systems, handicap accessibility and building code improvements, safety and security improvements, updated cameras, intrusion alarm, access control, intercom and radio communication systems. Goddard's transition to a 1,200 student middle school campus would require an additional 14 classrooms and support spaces, expanded kitchen and dining, a new parking lot with lights, and new parking lot with lights. Other improvements at Goddard include new furniture at classroom and administrative office additions and at the dining area, upgraded technology equipment at classroom and administrative office additions, addition of a building-wide fire sprinkler system, improvements to aging facility systems, handicap accessibility and building code improvements, safety and security improvements, construction of new offices at main entrance with secured entry vestibules, updated cameras, intrusion alarm, access control, intercom and radio communication systems. San Jacinto's transition to a 1,200 student middle school campus would require an additional 18 classrooms and support spaces, expanded kitchen, and a new library. Other improvements at San Jacinto include new furniture at classroom and library additions and dining area, upgraded technology equipment at classroom and library additions, addition of a building-wide fire sprinkler system, improvements to aging facility systems, handicap accessibility and building code improvements, safety and security improvements, secured entry vestibules, updated cameras, intrusion alarm, access control, intercom and radio communication systems. Changes to the Legacy High School campus would include reconstruction of 3 tennis courts to accomplish complete middle school expectations, aesthetic improvements to existing building interior and exterior, new furniture and added technology equipment at all middle school program spaces, conversion of space as required to satisfy middle school programs and support spaces, addition of a building-wide fire sprinkler system, improvements to aging facility systems, handicap accessibility and building code improvements, safety and security improvements, reconstruction of administration office to main entrance with secured entry vestibules, updated cameras, intrusion alarm, access control, and intercom and radio communication systems. Opinion. Call me when the Midland ISD bond election is over. On Wednesday, the Reporter-Telegram published a story having to do with bond election, and well, some people were not happy. Even some friends have communicated, expressing their disappointment. The purpose of today's opus isn't to get into a debate about that story. It is to remind a community to pace yourself. There are still more than 100 days between the day this column is published and Election Day, November 7th. And if you don't think I am counting, you are crazy. Every time someone asks what's your favorite thing about a particular election, I usually think to myself, quote, the day after, end quote. Because it is true. Elections are a pain in the butt and stress inducer like no other. And I have the literal battle scars to prove it. No matter what we write, what type of opinion articles we ask for, or how well our forum goes off, no one is going to be happy. This bond will be no different. I will be accused of being pro-bond, anti-bond, and everything in between. I will have people speculating about where my kids go to school, about the fact that my parents are Midland High graduates, and about who I sit next to at a school board meeting. Someone might even dig up that my grandparents were both Midland ISD employees decades ago, because that makes me a legacy. It is the nature of the beast. It comes with the territory that is life. I will remind myself that the first publisher of the Midland Reporter-Telegram, T. Paul Barron, stated this newspaper will strive for progress. I believe 100% in those words. Fortunately for Mr. Barron, progress in the 1930s wasn't determined with a clever tweet or social media message. Times were simpler in those days. I refuse to define progress as it is related to this bond election. The MISD school board will determine what the eventual ask looks like. We will report that ask, good and not as good, depending on your point of view. And Midlanders, not this newspaper, will be the jury. As I have written previously, my top concerns for the district are student outcomes and discipline. Again, I ask for people on both sides to pace yourself because elections aren't won in July. They aren't decided 100 days out. And like a friend once told me, if the project is a good one and people have trust in the elected officials and executive leadership that will execute the plan, Midland voters will generally vote for ballot initiatives that come their way. I caution Midlanders who want to blame past election losses on some anti-public education sentiment in Midland, because that's not the truth. Midland ISD has been victorious in three of its last four bond elections since 2003, and the election in 2019 was destined for victory if not for a series of campaign-related errors. That bond plan presented to the community was good enough in 2019. The execution of the campaign, particularly by Midland ISD executive leadership, cost this community a needed win. Any election loss since 2001, and I believe there have been four failed tax elections, happened because the plan wasn't good enough and/or voters didn't have confidence in leadership. There are just too many examples in the last two decades of the electorate being swayed to vote in the affirmative. Midland ISD, three bond election wins totaling more than $250 million. The City of Midland, the $100 million road bond in the Economic Development Sales Tax election. The Hospital District, a bond victory of $115 million in a sales tax election. The County, 1-for-1 in bond elections. Midland College, also 1-for-1 in bond elections. That sounds like a $500 million in voter-approved election victories, not including the tens of millions of dollars in sales tax collected. Getting back to the weeks before the campaign, again, it is political lifetime. There will be plenty of ups and downs. Pace yourself. As for me, I'm looking for a rock to climb under, somewhere where I can avoid social media and keep the lowest of profiles. Hopefully, I will be busy enough printing your letters, running bond participants' opinion articles to give you more information and offering the occasional story. Call me if you want, 432-352-0605. But I am telling you, I am Switzerland when it comes to this election. My sanity and health will thank me for it. Yes, 102 days and counting. Bond Committee Presentation Things to Know. Facts and Figures. The Recommendation. A. Two new high schools, $1.077 billion. Middle school additions and renovations, $225.3 million. And safety, security, and accessibility, $58.7 million. Proposition A, total $1.361 billion. B, deferred maintenance, $260.2 million. New elementary, $57 million. Proposition B, total $317.2 million. INS tax rates, currently 7 cents per $100 valuation. If bond passes, 28.46 cents per $100 valuation. Total cost impact, an average home value of $341,000, $444 a year. Project timeline, planning and design of new high schools, start January 2024, complete spring 2025. District-wide improvements, maintenance and renovations to aging facilities, safety, security, and accessibility, start January 2024, complete December 2028. Construction of new elementary school in Northeast Midland, Lone Star Trails, start spring 2024, complete summer 2025. Construction of new Legacy and Midland High Schools, start summer 2025, complete summer 2028. Reuse freshman and or senior high school campuses for middle schools, start spring 2028, complete summer 2029. Bond calendar, August 21st, last day to call a bond election, October 8th, first day to publish notice of an election, October 10th, voter registration, October 17th, last day to post notice of an election, October 23rd, first day of early voting, October 24th, last day to publish notice of an election, November 3rd, last day of early voting, November 7th, election day. What's up with Midland? Centennial Park. Movies in the Park, Hotel Transylvania 4, August 11th. City Nights, Barbecue Cook-Off, Saturday. Hunks the Show, August 1st. The Cookie Encounter, Beginner Cookie Decorating Class, August 17th. The Destination, Jake Bush, Saturday. Tejano Thirsty, Thursday, August 3rd. Friday Night Live, The Day Trips, August 4th. Bailey Ray / Alora Leonard, August 5th. Karaoke Night, August 10th. Friday Night Live, Jerry Hart and Flatland, August 11th. La Dez, August 12th. Open Mic Night, August 17th. Earth, Body, and Soul, Walk-In Tara Reading, every Tuesday. Walk-In Reiki Energy Clearing, and every Wednesday. Tea and Tara, August 4th. Aura Photography, August 5th. Chakra Balancing, August 18th. Vendor, Saturday, August 19th. Automatic Writing with Your Guides, August 24th. Horseshoe, Midland County Fair, August 24th through 27th. Museum of the Southwest, Downtown Midland Farmers Market, every Saturday. Summer Sunday Lawn Concert Series, Sunday. Sci-Fi MST3K, The Movie, August 25th. Ranchland Hills, Hope in One Golf Tournament, August 8th. The Tailgate, Pat Green, August 18th, Tall City Brewing Company, Geeks Who Drink Trivia every Tuesday, Tall City Beer Run every Thursday, Tall City Brewing Company Invitational, August 12th. The Venue at Live Oak, Drew Fish Band, August 3rd, Tejas Brothers, August 24th, The State Line Band / Chris DeAnda, August 31st. Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center, Cinema Under the Stars, Munster University, August 6th, Alice Cooper, August 19th, John Waite with John Ford Coley, August 24th, Cat Timpf, August 26th.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Odessa American for Sunday, July 30th. Bell family has storied history in Odessa. The story was written by Laura Dennis. A bit of history was shared and made during the Odessa City Council meeting Tuesday night, with a generous donation from one of Odessa's oldest families. Larry Bell and his family announced a few months ago they wanted to donate 100 acres to the city so it can build a $50 million sports complex in the Parks Bell Ranch area north of Faudry Road. The 80,000 to 100,000 square foot complex will feature 20 volleyball courts, 10 basketball courts, and a track, plus 8 to 12 multiple-purpose fields for soccer, football, and lacrosse, and up to 8 baseball, softball fields. City officials hope the complex will be paid for by corporate sponsorships and private donations. A move was made in that direction Tuesday to set up a non-profit organization that will be named in honor of Larry and Ellen Bell's late daughter, Amy Bell. The nonprofit will exist to accept donations for the private-public partnership to build the sports complex. This will be the largest partnership since the Toby and Sandra Oaf partnership with the city of Odessa to create the Marriott in downtown Odessa. Larry Bell told Odessa's city council that it is important to keep the legacy that our parents and grandparents cared deeply about the community and taught us to give back to where you came from, end quote. He said his family has built a wonderful life here and that it is important to give back and to pay it forward. Fighting. Odessan Saucita looking forward to next BKFC fight in New Mexico. The story was written by Michael Bauer. Jeremy Saucita hasn't been involved in bare-knuckle fighting for very long. Then again, the bare-knuckle fighting championship hasn't been around too long either. While the sport itself has been around for centuries, the BKFC held the first sanctioned bare-knuckle card since the 1800s back in 2018 when the league got started. Saucita, a native Odessan who graduated from Permian in 2008, has been training in the sport since 2021 and has been in two fights in the last year. His third will be coming up when he takes on Joshua Moreno on August 11th in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Quote, "I'm ready," Saucita said. "I'm excited. I'm looking forward to it," end quote. Saucita's days in bare-knuckle fighting began 2 years ago when former mixed martial artist Leonard Garcia from Lubbock was asked to participate in a BKFC card. After agreeing to it, Saucita began training with Garcia. Quote, "Garcia knew I was a good boxer, so we started a training camp," Saucita said. "He and I were sparring every week and getting him ready for his fight against Julian Lane. He told me that I could do a good job in bare-knuckle fighting. As it went on, he kept getting more fights, and I helped him prepare. He's a world champion in his weight camp," end quote. BKFC is presided over by former American professional boxer David Feldman. Each fight takes place in a specialized circular four-rope ring referred as the squared circle. Saucita originally was a boxer, but now does bare-knuckle fighting full-time. He talked about some of the differences between boxing and bare-knuckle fighting. Quote, "A lot of people ask me that," Saucita said. "It's not just simply boxing without the gloves. It's hard to explain it to some people. When you eliminate that glove, it changes everything. Now you can grab your opponent with your bare hands, and you can have an act to clinch. You can legally grab someone in the back of the neck, and as long as you're punching with your opposite hand, then it's still legal." After receiving approval to hold a sanctioned event in Cheyenne, Wyoming in 2018, BKFC held the first state-sanctioned bare-knuckle boxing event in the United States since 1889. Since then, the sport has grown. Quote, "It's kind of new, but it's growing crazy right now," Saucita said. "Everybody loves it right now. Conor McGregor, the Diaz brothers, all those guys are in the works of joining bare-knuckle fighting. It's a big deal," end quote. Saucita's first fight was against Roderick Stewart in August last year in Albuquerque, which resulted in a win for the Odessan. His recent fight was against Alonso Martinez on May 19th in Omaha, in which he lost, bringing his record to 1-1 at the moment. For Saucita, training contains a lot of cardio and conditioning. Quote, "What I've been doing these past couple of weeks, I've been using a very small glove or no glove at all," Saucita said. Quote, "I'll wrap my wrist and make it as similar as possible when fighting in an actual fight. Whoever's helping me train will put on a body vest and I'll be punching at them bare knuckles to try and keep it as real without punching one in the face, end quote. He'll train out of different gyms in Odessa, including Crunch and True Fit. As far as boxing gyms, Salcita boxes out of Gorilla Heavy Hitters. The time Salcita takes in between each card depends on his condition from the previous fight. Quote, "It depends on how healthy you are and how good you are," Salcita said. "It can get pretty gruesome. You take a lot of cuts to the face really fast," end quote. Salcita has suffered his share of injuries. Quote, "My first fight, my nose got broken pretty good," Salcita said. "They put it back in place. That's the difference between bare knuckles and boxing. You get a lot more cuts very quickly," end quote. It's worth it for Salcita, who enjoys taking part in a type of fighting where it's hard to fake anything. The boxing world has seen more celebrities and media personalities take part, most notably Jake Paul. However, Salcita feels that in bare-knuckle fighting, nothing feels staged. Quote, "I feel like more fights these days are set up with all these celebrities," Salcita said. "It's kind of brought the sport down from fighting and training hard to fighting a famous YouTuber. But in bare-knuckle, it's hard to fake getting hit by a fist. I think it helps open people's eyes to combat sports again," end quote. Flooded with sightseers, Europe's iconic churches struggle to accommodate both worship and tourism. The story was written by Giovanna Del Orto from the Associated Press. A recent Saturday evening mass at Sagrada Familia Parish had all the hallmarks of a neighborhood worship service, from prayers for ill and deceased members to name day wishes for two congregants in the pews. But it also featured security checks to get in and curious tourists peering down to take photos of the worshipers from above. The regular mass is held in the crypt of modernist architect Antoni Gaudi's masterpiece church, one of Europe's most visited monuments. With tourism reaching or surpassing pre-pandemic records in Barcelona and across southern Europe, iconic sacred sites are struggling to accommodate the faithful who come to pray and the millions of visitors who often pay to view the art and architecture. Quote, "We're working to get ahead of this so that we don't get to a collapse," said the Reverend Josep Maria Turrell, rector at Sagrada Familia and Barcelona Archdiocese's director for tourism, pilgrimage, and sanctuaries. An increasingly popular strategy is to have visitors and the faithful go separate ways, with services held in discrete places, visits barred at worship times, and altogether different entry queues. This spring, the Vatican opened a separate pathway starting outside St. Peter's Basilica for those who want to enter to pray or attend Mass, so they wouldn't be discouraged by sometimes hours-long lines for the average of 55,000 daily visitors, said Basilica spokesperson Roberta Leon. But the challenge remains, how to balance the church's competing roles amid the tourism surge without sacrificing their spiritual purpose. Quote, "It's just really hard because you also want people to experience your faith," said Daniel Olson, a Brigham Young University professor who researches religious tourism. With an estimated 330 million people visiting religious sites yearly around the world, it's one of the tourism market's largest segments. Worshippers, who often come because celebrated churches tend to have more services than regular parishes, need free access even as tourists often pay fees that are crucial to maintaining the sites. Quote, "The temple needs to be a place for services and not a theme park," said Joan Albegas after Mass at the Sagrada Familia Crypt, which he's attended regularly for six decades. He praised the move in recent years to celebrate one multilingual Sunday Mass at the main altar in the soaring, color-filled basilica. There's such demand for the 800 free tickets, however, that several hundred people queuing routinely don't get in, Turrell said. Lay and religious leaders say the histories of these sacred sites should be presented to visitors who are increasingly unfamiliar with faith traditions in rapidly secularizing countries where lesser-known churches are emptying out or being repurposed. Quote, some people go to the cathedral and they don't realize they're in a church. It's a situation that's developing in nations that were majority Christian, and now faith is cooling off, said Jose Fernandez Lago, rector of the Cathedral of Santiago de Compostela. Filled with masterpieces from Romanesque sculpture to lavish Baroque decorations, Santiago's cathedral attracts hundreds of thousands of tourists and pilgrims who, since the Middle Ages, have traveled along the Camino routes to venerate St. James's tomb. To preserve its role as a revered pilgrim's church, Lago said the cathedral doesn't charge entry fees, cap visitor numbers, or require a dress code. On a hot early summer morning, a steady stream of pilgrims ducked each other's selfie sticks in front of the jewel-encrusted St. James statue, some still in tight cycling shorts or sweat-stained hiking shirts. But visits aren't allowed during the four daily masses celebrated at the main altar, and priests as well as security guards constantly ask visitors to lower their voices to allow others to pray. Quote, it keeps getting harder, said Juan Sexto, who in 10 years working security at the cathedral has noticed a change in how many visitors behave. As crowds surged before the always-packed noon pilgrims' mass, he kept stepping to the main microphone asking for silence, which lasted a minute or so before enthusiastic visitors resumed chatting. Sexto had a supporter in the second pew. Waiting for mass to start, pilgrim Miguel Angel Arino said the church did well to allow only the faithful during worship times, while leaving the cathedral open long hours for cultural visits. Quote, as people, we need the transcendent. Leisure and rest and time with God are not incompatible, Arino said. Without some strategy, however, they can become so. Coexistence between worshippers and tourists has been controversial at Istanbul's Hagia Sophia. Built as a landmark cathedral in the Byzantine era, turned into a mosque by the conquering Ottoman Empire in the 1400s, and open as a museum for the last century, it was converted back into a functioning mosque in 2020 by Turkey's Islamic-oriented government. Now visitors can tour the structure for free outside of prayer hours. In Hagia Sophia's main section, where prayers are held, the vast mosaics depicting Christian figures are hidden behind drapes, and most of the marble floor is covered with carpeting. Quote, we would like it to be a museum again, said Ricardo Bravo, a tourist from Mexico visiting the monument with his family. Quote, we would like to see more things, to understand more, to appreciate more Turkish culture, end quote. At many of Spain's most visited churches, the balance was often off-kilter in the opposite direction. So many visitors thronged the vast Basilica del Pilar in Zaragoza on a mid-June Saturday that it was nearly impossible to hear the midday mass celebrated in the small chapel where a statue of Our Lady of the Pillar is venerated. With some 2.5 million annual visitors, Barcelona Cathedral was also close to a breaking point before its council revolutionized the worship versus tourist balance over the last few years. Quote, it was like being in a market, recalled Anna Villanova, who directs the cathedral's tourist strategy. We had to put some order. The cathedral instituted caps on visitor numbers, required tour groups to use wireless audio guides to reduce noise, and added staffers to explain the new policies to visitors and those coming for daily mass or confession, held in a side chapel with crystal doors to preserve silence. Quote, "The point comes when tourism is so massive that it occupies the worship space," said Xavier Manjo, who oversees the cathedral's publications. "The cathedral is alive. It's not a museum." The visitor guides included with the entry fee seek to prioritize the church's role as an active place of worship. The nave description in the unmissable list, for example, starts by stating that this cathedral has been and is a space dedicated to prayer before describing a stunning Catalan Gothic architecture. The entry for the rooftop terraces explains that this is where the blessing of the city happens each May on the Feast of the Holy Cross. Quote, "As tourism has been growing, it's also an opportunity not to proselytize, but to discover the deep meaning of what they can see," Turrell said. "All those who enter like tourists can leave like pilgrims, can have a spiritual experience," end quote. While 3.7 million tourists explore the Sagrada Familia's arresting architecture and mesmerizing stained glass windows last year, Fenelon Mendez remains focused on the parish activity literally underneath. Originally from Venezuela, he's lived in the neighborhood with his family for a decade and often serves as a sacristan and altar server. There are ministry programs for single moms and for migrants, and regular food distributions, he said. "The basilica provides a unique experience, so the faithful should continue to get full access to it," Mendez said. "But the crypt, where regular worshipers gather, is the true core where many like him feel at home." Quote, "You could take the basilica to New York, but we are here," he said in the sacristy, long after the day's tourists had stopped wandering above.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.